Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Kuf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the second line from the bottom of Kuf Yud Gimel Amid Beis. That's the second line from the bottom of Kuf Yud Gimel Amid Beis. Before we begin the shiur, let us glance at the side where we have our topic heading we call the Nosei. Note that this Nosei will continue till the end of the perek on Kuf Yud Dalid Omid Beis. We're referring to this as Dino Shel Rebbe Pedos. You'll notice in our Gemara the name Rebbe Pedos is in a firebox, and that is simply because his din will preoccupy us for quite a while, as we said, till the end of the perek. Koton oichel nevelos aldas atzmo. If a minor is seen eating something unkosher, nevela in this case is simply the archetype of forbidden activity. If one sees him eating nevelos, ein based in mitzuvin lahafrisho, it is not obligatory upon the court to separate him, to stop him. Basically, he's only a child, he's a minor, he's not chayev in mitzvahs, he's not going to be guilty of any offense for having done the sin, and as such, based in is not obligated to intervene and stop him. We're going to take note of, is this true even for Dinim Doraisa? Now, when you use the term Nevela, Nevela is something that is forbidden on a Doraisa, on a Torah level. Even so, Beis Din might very well be exempt, not obligated to stop the minor. When we get to Kuf Yud Aleph and Aleph, will then take note of some of the structural aspects of the Gemara. So now the Gemara, second line from the bottom, Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bisna, Irkisu lay. Irkisu means something got lost. So it was lost. Lost to him were Maftechei the Bay Midrasha, the keys of the Beis Medrash, Birishus Harabim, in a public domain on Shabbos. Or in simpler terms, he had keys for a Beis Medrash, and this story takes place on Shabbos, and they fell out of his pocket, they fell out of his possession onto the floor of a public thoroughfare. Also lekamei de Rebbe Pedos. So he brings his problem to Rebbe Pedos, Omar le, and Rebbe Pedos says, Zeal, go. And now we continue at the top of Kuf Yudalam and Aleph. Dabor toli vitalia. Dabor is a word that means to lead or bring along with you. Children, the girls and boys. Tali means youngsters, so girls and talia, the females. The litailu hasaman, stroll over there in that area where you lost the keys. The e mashkechi lahu, if they find the keys, maisi lahu, the children will bring them in, they'll bring them to you. Al mokasovar, so you can see here from this, Rabbi Pedos holds, cotton oichel nevelos ain't based in mitzuvin lafrisho, a minor who is eating nevela, technically is unslaughtered meat, but as we said earlier, it means a cotton was doing a sin, in this case, the picking up of something on Shabbos in a public thoroughfare in a Rishus HaRabim and carrying it onwards and then putting it down somewhere later, that would be a Torah-level offense of Hoitzah on Shabbos. And yet, it's okay, as what will transpire. The kid on his own will see the keys, pick them up, will notice this taking place, and we're not going to say anything. Now, structurally, you notice we have a house shape that appears in alternating directions. So on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivne heading, we have the house shape when it's inverted with the point facing down. That constitutes what we call a siyua, a support to Rabbi Pedos. And when the point is facing up, that is a kushyo, a question on Rabbi Pedos. So Leimo Misayele, can we say the following supports Rabbi Pedos? Lo yomar odom letinok, you don't say to a child on Shabbos, Havei li mafteach, bring my keys through the public domain. Havei li choysem, bring me my seal. The choysem is often associated with a ring that has a seal on it. Elo manicho toilesh manichoi zorek. You leave the child doing, if he's doing some type of malachis. Toilesh means to rip something out of the ground, something that's growing, or let the child go and throw things in the public domain. Without your instructing the child to do so, if he does it on his own, it's okay. The Meforshim deal with why the source uses these verb forms, Toleish and Zorik, when that wasn't the example with which the source opened. But for our purposes, the rule that this source is conveying is that don't instruct a child to do a malacha on Shabbos, but if he does something on his own, you don't have to stop him. So this source would seem to support Rebbe Pedos. The Gemara is Doche and says, Omar Abaye, Toilesh equals Beotzitz She'eno Nokuv. This source that says, let the kid do something on his own, that the Antolesh is the Malacha, but it's referring to ripping something out of an Otzitz, is a flower pot that has no hole in the bottom, a sealed, closed container, closed on the bottom. Ripping something out of that on Shabbos does not constitute a malacha on a Torah level. Zorek bekarmelis derabbanan. The source that spoke about the child throwing something, it was not in a public thoroughfare, but in a karmelis. A karmelis is a rabbinic region when it comes to Shabbos activity. Suffice it to say, it's not a private domain, it's not a purely public domain, hence it doesn't constitute a Torah level violation. But as far as Abaye is concerned, if you saw a child violating something that's prohibited on a Torah level, you would have to intervene. Toshma. Now, we indicated with this marking that this would be a challenge. Once again, a Shabbos source, an idol worshiper that comes on Shabbos to extinguish a fire. Ein omrin lo kavei ve'al techaveh. We don't get involved. We don't say go in and put it out, or we don't stop and we don't say don't put it out. We just remain silent. Mitnei she'ein shvisoso alehem. His obligation to observe Shabbos is non-existent. An idol worshiper is not obligated to observe Shabbos, and therefore you're not what he does on his own, you don't have to get involved. The fact that you will benefit by the fact that he put out the fire, that's fine, but you're not obligated to stop him. He's not obligated to keep Shabbos, we'll say even further, his Shabbos observance is not something that is upon us to concern ourselves with. Koton habo lechabois, a child that comes to put out a fire. Omrim lo, we tell the child, al techabe, don't do that, don't put it out. Shishvisosolim. Needless to say that putting out fires on Shabbos involves malachas, involves prohibited Shabbos activity. And what you see with the miner coming to put it out, we stop him. So it would seem from this that Kotten Oichel and Velas Bezin is Mitzuvah Lahafrisho, not like Rebbe Pedos. The following mark, the trapezoid shape, you see is used to highlight Rabbi Yochanan, and it will be of value when we go further on in the Gemara. In the meantime, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Be'oisal Das Oviv. The case featured in this source is the child is doing it with the father's approval. Now, what do we mean by that? So we'll use Rashi on the third line from the top. Be'oisal Das Oviv, Sha'atinok, Tinok is the child. He's gazing upon his father. He sees his father is very interested in the fire being put out. And the father is standing right there. It's as if he is instructing the child to do so. Now, that's not something that anyone ever permitted, not even Rebbe Pedos. So that is a problem where the father is standing there, the child receiving the vibes that his father is very interested in this happening, and the father is standing right there. It's tantamount to the father telling him, do it. Avol hanuch maftechas Rabbi Yitzchak, the case involving the keys that were lost in the public thoroughfare with which we opened up today's Gemara, lo hodi on shenevdu sham, v'lo hikiru b'dayto shenoachlo. The children that were brought there were unaware of keys being lost over there, and they certainly did not know of Rav Yitzchak's mindset regarding getting those keys. So what would have happened there is the children would have, on their own, innocently, from their own perspective, totally unaware, found keys, picked them up, and brought them to where they have to be brought, but totally on their own. And that is okay. The Gemara continues. So in the source that was most recently cited involving the fire, we said it's Oisal Das Oviv, as far as the cotton is concerned. Now the Gemara asks a question. The Kavosei Gabi Oivik Kichovim, the parallel in that same source had a case featuring an idol worshipper, so the parallel would be the Oisal Das Yisrael. Mi Shori, where the Gentile is doing it with the knowledge of the Jew who will benefit by the fire being extinguished, and the Jew is well aware of what's going on. Are you telling me that that's okay? That's not all right. So the Gemara says, Oivik Kichovim Adaita Denafshe Ovid, when an idol worshipper engages in some activity, his decision to act is something purely on his own. The Rashi adds, "Oyvei kochav madaita denaf nafshei oved afilu below yediyas Yisrael oyvei kochav miskavin lahano osoi sheyoydeya sheitol sachar." The goy, the oyvei kochav, this idol worshipper, will put out the fire even without the Jew's knowledge. He's intending for his own benefit. He knows that he'll be rewarded, he'll be paid for having put out the fire. So the source of motivation with regard to the Gentile is something purely internal, not so in the case of the child. Toshma, and the inverted house form will tells us, as we saw before, a source that should support Rabbi Pedos. You'll notice right after this, Rabbi Yochanan appears again, and he will be rejecting the support. The discussion we just had a source that attacked Rabbi Pedos, and Rabbi Yochanan entered to support, to answer on behalf of Rabbi Pedos. Here you've got Rabbi Yochanan actually doing the opposite. So let's see. Toshma, the general topic involved in this source has to do with tithes. One is prohibited, of course, in eating something that's untithed. Ben chover sherogil leilech etzel avi imo ama oretz. The child of a chover. A chover is a person who is diligent in tithing his produce. So he comes from a good home, as they say, a proper home, and he goes to visit his maternal grandfather, the father of his mother, who is an ignoramus, an amoretz. An amoretz is someone who is not trustworthy with regard to tithing. You don't have to worry that when he's visiting Gramps, that Gramps is going to give him food that has not been tithed. Motzo biyado peros, if you find in the child's hands fruits, ein zokuk lo. You don't have to take it away from him. What do you see? You see that we don't have to worry. We don't have to stop the child from doing what appears to be a sin. So we have here a support to Rabbi Pedos. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says there's no support. Bidmai hekelu. Demai is a situation where there is doubt whether the tithing had taken place. And when we speak about the Amoratzim and the ignoramuses who are not diligent in tithing, it's really an issue of doubt. Maybe he did. In fact, the Gemara points out elsewhere, Roiv Amoratzim Mafrishim Hain, that the majority, in fact, do tithe. So the realm of Demai is a realm in which we can be quite lenient. But when it comes to an outright, clear sin, and you see a child engaged in that, you must stop him. The Gemara now asks, Elo taimo de demai. So the reason we don't have to intervene is because it's this low level or light level, lenient area of halacha called demai. Ha vadai bor la sure. However, if you saw the child eating something that you know was not tithed, you know with certainty it wasn't tithed, so then it would be like Nevela. That would be an Isur Doraisa. We would have to stop him. Boilasri means we would have to tithe it. We couldn't let the child continue eating the untithed stuff. So that is what, that's the position that Rabbi Yochanan would seem to take. The Gemara asks, V'homer Rabbi Yochanan be'oisav da'as aviv. But beforehand, Rabbi Yochanan said that when do we stop a child? Only if he's doing it with the approval of his father. But if he would do an Isur, even an Isur Doraisa on his own, we would not have to stop him. So how come over here we're saying that if it were truly untithed, we would have to stop him? Ela Rabbi Yochanan Sfuke Mesafkele. Rabbi Yochanan, in truth, is in doubt about this issue. Koi Hocha Matri. If you're standing here and you try to bring a proof in one direction, he pushes it off. Koi hocha matri. And if you stand in the other, take the other position, you bring a source indicating the otherwise, he pushes that off as well. And all of this is done out of a position of doubt on the part of Rabbi Yochanan. Ta shma. Again, we have an inverted house, an attempt to support Rabbi Pedos. Ben Chavir Kohen, the child of a Kohen who is a trustworthy individual when it comes to matters of tithing and matters of ritual purity. Sherogil Leilech Eitzel Aviimoy Kohen Amoretz, that he frequents his maternal grandfather, who in this case is portrayed as an Amoretz. Ein Choshishin Shema Yachilenu Trumo Tamea. One doesn't have to consider that maybe Gramps is feeding him defiled truma. Truma, when it's defiled, truma is the tithe of produce given to Kohanim. When it becomes defiled, it is forbidden to eat it. It must be burnt. So you have this child from a good home, is visiting Gramps, who's an Amoretz. The source says you don't have to consider the possibility that Gramps is going to give him Truma to man. Now, the assumption right now is that would be an Isur Doraisa. Motza biado peros ein zokuk lo. If you find the child holding produce, you don't have to take it away from him. You don't have to deal with the child. Well, that would seem like Rebbe Pedos. The Gemara rejects this. Betruma de Rabbonan. The Truma in question is that type of produce that on a Torah level does not need to be tithed to begin with. We're dealing with those, that kind of growth, that kind of produce that is needs to be tithed only on a rabbinic level. So as we indicated before, that when you're in the realm of rabbinic law, there is room for, let's say, non-involvement, room for leniency. But if it were something like carrying keys in a public domain on Shabbos, that would not be allowed. Ta Shema, another attempt to support Rabbi Pedas. Yonek Tinok Vaholech Meyoderes Kichovim Ubehema Tameyop. A nursing child can nurse from a woman who is lactating and she happens to be an idol worshiper, or from an unkosher variety animal. The Ein Choshishin Beyonek Sheketz. And one doesn't have to worry, one doesn't have to stop the child on the grounds that he is consuming that which is forbidden. Let us make it clear that pig's milk, for example, is something that is osur mida oraisa. And yet in this source, we're allowing the child to suckle from a horse, from a pig, from a behemoth tamea. Don't feed him in a proactive fashion the forbidden meats, nevelos and trefus, shkotsim, ramosim, all kinds of creatures that are forbidden. Umikulon yoinek mehem vafilu b'shabbosin. From all of these kind of forbidden creatures, however, he can suckle milk from them even on Shabbos. Ubegodoyl usur, an adult, though it would be forbidden. Abashol Omer Noagim Hoyinu Shiyankim Ibeim Otura Biyom Tov. Abashol tells us, and we'll see Abashol as part of a discussion later on, he says, we used to suckle from kosher variety animals on Yom Tov. Kotoni Mia, it said in this source, and what we have to emphasize right now, Ein Choshishin Biyonek Sheketz. One does not have to worry about a violation of suckling from a forbidden creature. Well, that would seem to be like Rabbi Pedas. If the child is suckling on his own, consuming forbidden food, we leave him do so. The Gemara rejects this. Hosam mishum sakona. The source there was dealing with a child who is in danger. If he doesn't suckle, he will experience something of a dangerous nature. So that's the heter in that source. Now you can see that at this point we have a bracketed section. In fact, if you look closely at our markings, you'll notice there's a double bracket, an internal bracket within this section, that we have a note explaining on the side where we've written Ad kan ha'veikur hadachia. This is the primary, the main point, this answer, this rejection of the support. The reason we're lenient in that case with the suckling is because there's an element of danger. That's it. And then achreas sograyim, agmorah mamshichol odun b'Rabbi Pedas. After the bracketed section, you can use your bracket length indicator to see where the bracket ends. At that point, we will go back to discuss through sources the din of Rabbi Pedas. Is it something we can support, or is it challenged by Tanaic sources? Besocha sograim, within the bracketed section, haGemara makshe al haDechia uMitaretzes. The Gemara will be challenging this Dechia. The Gemara pushed off the support by saying, if you're dealing with Sakona, so is that really a good answer? Is that a good rejection? Is that solid? We're going to ask a question and then we will answer it. So now, the Gemara within the brackets. Ihachi Godol Nami. If you're dealing with a sakona, why does the source indicate that a godol, an adult, is forbidden? If it's something life-threatening, so then it should not be prohibited. There should be no restriction. The Gemara says, Godol boy umdana. Umdana means an evaluation. How bad is his case? Will this help him? In other words, there might be a sense of danger, but you don't jump in immediately to drinking the forbidden milk. more asks, Nami Leboy Umdana, with regard to a child, then also we should not jump into it and also require an evaluation beforehand. Omar Rav Huna Braid Rav Yeshua Stam Tinok Misukon Eitzel Cholov. Your basic toddler, infant, is in a state of danger if he doesn't nurse or doesn't drink that forbidden milk. So because there's this sense of imminent danger with regard to a child, there's no need for an umdana. As opposed to an adult, we have to evaluate, can he hold off till Motsoi Shabbos and then we'll get something mutter for him? That is what is the difference between the cotton and the godol. As you can see, we have another brackets. We call this an internal brackets. On the side of the Gemara, you see there's a note, double starred note, and we read as follows: Sograim elu miuadim. These brackets, these angular brackets, are designed with tachem aketa to set off the boundaries of a section shemivaeres dvorav shel Abba Shaul that comes to explain Abba Shaul. Now we have to note initially that, and this is information taken from Rashi, that yinika, suckling from an animal, is actually an isur derabbanan. It's called mefarek kilachayad. Mefarek is the av malach involving removing something from the point at which it grows or develops. So milk develops within the udders of an animal. If one puts his lips to the actual udders and suckles from them, so he's removing the milk from its point of growth in an unusual fashion. Usually people will, of course today there's modern machinery that helps to milk animals, but the milk is first removed from the animal into a receptacle and then you drink from that. But to suckle directly from the animal is something unusual. That's called kilachar yad in Shabbos terms, and that removes it from the realm of a Torah level offense to something purely rabbinic. That's, as I say, information that you can see in the Rashi. And with that in mind, we continue. Abba Shaul Omer Nohagin Hoyinu Shiyonkin Mibehema Tahiro Biyom Tov. Heichi Domi, what are the circumstances behind Abba Shaul's teaching? E deiko sakono, if there's an element of danger, afilu b'Shabbos nami, then why restrict the permission to Yom Tov? It should be allowed on Shabbos as well. The e deleko sakono, if there's no element of danger, afilu b'Yom Tov, also then even on Yom Tov, it should be prohibited. Lo tzricha, no, it is necessary to be taught. The deiko tsara, that you're dealing with a situation of pain, of a strain or pain without the milk. The Kosovar, and we are of the opinion, or of Abba Shaul is of the opinion, that nursing or suckling directly from an animal, Mefarek Kilachar Yadhu, it's called Mefarek, but Kilachar Yad. Mefarek is again the removal of something from its point of growth, but in an unusual fashion. Shabbos de Iser Skila Gozu Rabbonan. Shabbos, which ultimately carries with it a capital punishment, the punishment of being stoned for someone who willingly, knowingly violates Shabbos after being warned by two witnesses, he is subject to stoning. So, therefore, Gozru Rabbonan. The Rabbonan imposed the restriction that even though there is an element of suffering, of pain, nevertheless, we don't want you doing even rabbinic level offenses. Yom Tov, the Isur Lav, Yom Tov, which is ultimately a lower level type offense. In other words, if one knowingly violates Yom Tov, even after having received warning from two witnesses, the maximum penalty that he could receive is lashing, but it's not a capital crime. It's not a capital offense with carrying capital punishment with it. So, therefore, since on the maximum level of offense, there is, it's called an isur lav, it's considered the violation of a negative command. Lo gozru bei rabbonan. When it comes to something of a rabbinic nature, the rabbis did not impose any restrictions. So when it comes to a case of tsar, and you're dealing with a melacha de rabbonan, on Shabbos we say tsar does not supersede the rabbinic prohibition, but on Yom Tov, the tsar will supersede the rabbinic prohibition. In other words, the rabbis didn't even impose their isur, their restriction under those circumstances. Toshma. We have a pasuk that is found in the Torah dealing with forbidden types of creatures, forbidden to eat. It says in the pasuk, Lo soflum ki sheketz heim. And since, as everyone knows, the Torah appears without vowelization, this word could be read, Lo sa'achilum. Do not feed them. Lo soflum, as it appears or as it's read, means don't eat them. But with this verb form, ta'achilum, would mean do not feed others. Lahazir agdolim alaktanim. My love, what does it mean to warn, or to, we'll say, to motivate the gedolim, the adults, regarding children? What does it mean? My love, the omar lahu lo sochlu. Doesn't it mean that if you see a child eating a sheketz, a forbidden type creature, you tell him to stop? So at this point, then as our house marking showed with the point facing up, this represents a problem for Rebbe Padas, because the source is seemingly telling us that an adult who sees a child violating this offense, the adult must stop him. Nope, that's not what the source is saying. Deloy lisfulu biyodayim. What the source is saying is, do not proactively feed him. But if you see a child on his own eating something forbidden, you don't have to stop him. And we have an additional marking that's indicated on the side under the Mivneh heading. The diamond marking will be highlighting the following words, Sheketz, and then the upcoming source, Dam. Dam is blood, also a forbidden substance for eating. And the third diamond highlights an expression we wrote in between the lines called Tumas Mace. And that has relevance to Kohanim, who are prohibited to defile themselves to the dead. Another marking that we're noting right now is a dashed underline that will be highlighting the word biodayim. Biodayim means something proactive. And we're going to be giving this answer, or it's the answer to, let's say, to reject the question that's raised each time on Rebbe Pilos. You can see the houses with their points facing up. In the next few lines, three questions are raised against Rebbe Pilos. Each time, the same answer is going to be given. That's what we've written. Oysa Tshuva will be given Gimel Pa'amim. Do Iser hu rak im oisim oisoi lakoton biyodayim. The Gemara. Toshma. Kol nefesh mikem lo sochal dam. Pasuk is saying that none of us can eat blood. And it's pointed out by Rashi that this pasuk is an extra type of pasuk, meaning the prohibition of eating dam has already been stated. One can know that from other places. What do I need this pasuk for? Lahazir hagedolim al haktanim. It's telling us that the adults must concern themselves regarding the children. My love, what does that mean? Da amri lahu lo sochlu. That if you see a child eating blood, in fact, they're in certain societies, certain countries, they have a certain type of delicatessen. I think it's called blutwurst. It's some type of I've never seen it. I've never seen even a picture of it, but it strikes me from what people described. It's a type of maybe blood salami. And it's interesting to note the countries in which its blood is eaten. But that's something that we can just mention parenthetically. V'hameivin yavin. So the pasuk is warning against the not only the eating of blood, but that adults must concern themselves over the minors. So is it not so that it means lo sochlu, that you must tell them, if you see them eating it, you have to stop them? And that would be a problem for Rebbe Pedos. Lo, that's not what it's talking about. Rather, the lo lisfulu biyadayim, don't feed them the blood. Toshma. This pasuk is quoted in a very fragmented fashion, but on the side we've included the entire pasuk by Yikra Perek Chof Aleph Pasuk Aleph. It says, and we'll read the pasuk on the side, by Yomer Hashem El Moshe Emor El Kayanim B'nei Aroin V'yomarto Aleihem L'nefesh L'yitama B'yamov. The Almighty tells Moshe to instruct his brother Aaron, or to tell the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, to avoid defilement to the dead. Now, in this pasuk, you can see the word emor v'omarto. It seems to be a double expression or a redundancy of some sort. And the Gemara now, toshma emor v'omarto lahazir gedoy lemal haktanim. My love, the omar lahu lo titamu. Does it not mean here that adults are instructed to tell the children, do not become defiled? Lo, that's not the explanation. The lo litamu lahu biyodayim. Do not proactively defile a child to the dead. In other words, don't take a child into a room where there is a corpse. As you can see, we have answered, till this point, we've answered any questions we may have had on Rebbe Pedos. Now we have a bracketed section. After the brackets, take note of the length. This takes us down a number of lines from the top of Amud Beis. There is going to appear again a house shape with the point facing up, and if you scan ahead on the daf, you'll notice quite a few more, another three of them, sources that are cited from our Mishnah, all of which are brought as a question challenging Rebbe Pedos. So the discussion concerning Rebbe Pedos picks up after these brackets. In the meantime, the subject of the Gemara within the brackets is explained on the side, where our note reads, "Achrei segrama Gemara mamshicha hadiyun b'divrei Rebbe Pedos u'menasa lahakshir salov." After the brackets, the Gemara will continue its discussion concerning Rebbe Pedos and attempt to ask on him. But soichem, within the brackets, haGemara oisitz richusa, the Gemara shows the necessity. Lahazbir lama li lelamed ho iser shel asir biyadayim liyeled gimel pomim b'sheketz b'dam u'b'tumas meis. Why do I need three separate warnings telling adults to desist from any proactive violation concerning the minors? We saw, do not feed a child sheketz, do not feed a child dam, do not take a minor kohen and proactively defile him to the dead. Why do I have to be told that same principle three times? The Gemara. U'tsrichi. And I need this. I need each one of these examples. And of course, now you can appreciate why we have the diamonds highlighting the words sheketz, dam, and tomei meis. Why do I need each one? De'i ashmeinen shkotzim. Had we told you that you cannot proactively feed sheketz to a child, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Mishum de Isuron Bemashehu. In the realm of prohibited items, or the general realm of prohibitions, there are different quantities that apply to different areas of law. When it comes to the Isur of Shkotzim, Shkotzim are, we'll describe them as creepy crawlers, creatures that that have short legs and seem to move around on the ground. It's a general way of looking at shkotzim. There are, of course, flying shkotzim. There are shkotzim of water, but the prohibition of shkotzim is violated when you're dealing with a very small quantity, smaller than general prohibited food. Generally speaking, we speak about food in terms of a kezias, and when it comes to a liquid, kezias means an olive quantity. When it comes to a liquid, there is a liquid shiur known as a revius. These amounts, an olive quantity or revius, it's a much larger quantity than that which you find by a sheketz. The sheketz is measured in terms of an adosha. Adosha is something often translated as a lentil. But for our purposes, what the Gemara is saying, that shkotzim are more severe than other areas of prohibited food, as is evidenced by the dimensions. So if I would tell you can't feed a child something prohibited, and I tell you you can't feed him something, you can't feed him sheketz, all right, I know that sheketz is a very severe area of halacha. So maybe there, and how do I know it's severe? Because it's violated when you're dealing with an adosha quantity. So maybe in something that's severe like that, there is a prohibition of feeding the child. The Gemara continues at the top line, Aval dam de adika revius. Blood, however, that one is not said to be in violation of blood consumption until he consumes a revius quantity. Aim alo, maybe it's okay for me to feed a child blood. And had we told you the prohibition concerning blood, I might have restricted the prohibition to that example. Mishumdika kores. The penalty for eating blood is a much more severe punishment than for eating sheketz. For eating blood, one suffers the kores form of punishment. Aval shrotzim aim alo, but shrotzim is a mere negative command which would result in lashing, not in kores, dying prematurely or dying or children dying on him. That is kores. That doesn't apply to shrotzim. So maybe had I known that it's forbidden to feed a child dam, I would say, okay, that's a severe area as it's punished by kores. But shrotzim, which even for an adult is punishable only by lashing, there would be no problem in feeding a child shrotzim. V'hi ashminan hani tarti. And had we taught the prohibition of feeding dam and shrotzim to children, mishum di surin shove bakol, it's an isur, it's a prohibition that applies to all Jews. Aval tuma aim alo, tuma, which is a restricted area of law, applies only to kohanim, so maybe it's not as severe, and therefore to proactively metama a child wouldn't be prohibited. V'yashmin tuma, and had we taught the prohibition only with regard to tuma, I might have thought kohanim shiny, that when it comes to kohen matters and proactively defiling a minor kohen, that's different. Mishum deribo b'en mitzvus yiseros. The Torah has additional mitzvahs, additional obligations that apply to kohanim that don't apply to others. Mitzvos yiseros, extra or additional mitzvos. So maybe only with regard to kohen related matters do we say do not do this to the child. Aval hani, but dam and shrotzim, which is not a kohen matter, aim alo, maybe there's no restriction in feeding children, dam or shrotzim. Therefore, tzricha, I have to tell you in those cases as well. I have to tell you in each one of the cases, and it would not have been sufficient to teach one and expect me to derive the others from it. Ta shma. Now, we quote from our Mishnah, and this, of course, is standard Gemara structure. We began a long sugya with Rabbi Pedos at the opening of our shir that had to do with Kotten Oichel Nevelis, his Bezim Mitzuv LaHafrisho. What connection does that have to our Gemara in Yevomis? So the answer to that is right now we see that in order to settle that issue, we cite extensively from our Mishnah. So what do we see here? Toshma shnei achim echad pikeach veechad cheresh nesuin shtei achoyos pikos. We're dealing, once again, to remind anyone who might have forgotten, we're dealing with Yevomus matters. So two brothers, one of whom dies leaving no children, and in this case the two brothers, one is normal and the other is a deaf mute. They were married to two sisters that were both normal. Meis cheresh baal pikos. The cheresh, the deaf mute, dies, leaving a pikos widow. Ma yase pikeach baal pikos. What should his brother, who is totally sane, do? Well, teitse mishum achos isha. The widow is the pikeach's wife's sister, achos isha, and that's a forbidden relative. When you have a yavoma, that's a forbidden relative. So as we learned already since the beginning of the Masichta, there is no mitzvah of yivum. So she goes free, marries whomever she wants without yivum or chalitza. Meis pikeach baal pikos. The normal brother dies, leaving, of course, the widow, who's a regular, healthy woman, normal woman. The brother, the surviving brother, is a deaf mute. Ma yase cheresh baal pikos. What should the cheresh do? Now, we engaged in this extensively in previous shiurim, so we're not going over all the details again, but one should realize that the cheresh marriage is a, we'll call it a rabbinic level marriage, as we discussed in our previous shiur. So his relationship to his wife is a, we'll call it a low-level relationship in terms of the hierarchy of severity of halacha. His connection with his wife is therefore, we'll say, is rabbinic. He's now confronted with the death of his brother, leaving a widow, and the need for doraisa yibum. So he cannot continue with his wife, motzi es ishto. His wife happens to be the yevoma's, the widow's sister, and therefore, since his wife is on a low level connection to him, and there's a high level yevoma waiting in the balance, so the cheresh has to divorce his wife, beget, using a divorce document. The eshes ochiv asur liolam. Once he divorces his wife, so he can't do yibum either, because the yavama is achos grushaso. What do we see here? We have to focus on Rabbi Pedas, not to get too sidetracked with the details of yibum, but what do we see happening here? We see the cheresh divorcing his wife, and he doesn't marry the Yevoma. Amai moitzias ishto beget. Why does he have to divorce his wife? Tesev gabei. Let him stay. Let the woman stay with her husband. And you'll say that it's a problem for him to remain with her, because there's an overpowering, imposing obligation of yibum. And by the cheresh, that is, not divorcing his wife, so he's violating the laws of yibum. But why should that matter? Katan oichel levenlesu. The cheresh is parallel to a katan. The cheresh isn't necessarily a minor, but they're in the same halachic realm of being the, we'll call it, the incompetent individuals. You find the Gemara often refers to a cheresh, a shoita, an imbecile, a katan, all together. So the cheresh in this case represents what Rabbi Pedas mentioned, the cotton. So we have a case of the cheresh was the equivalent of a cotton oichel nevelis. He's living with his wife, albeit in sin, but that shouldn't be a problem. But what do we see here? We see that he has to get rid of his wife, motzias ishto. That is a problem for Rabbi Pedas. The Gemara says our insistence on the cheresh divorcing the wife is not out of our interest for the cheresh. If that were the only concern, we would let him continue. But the wife happens to be a pikos. She's a normal adult woman that is duty bound to all the mitzvahs. Mishum isura dida. His wife, the cheresh's wife, is living with a man and she should not continue living with him. She, the wife, is we call achos zikukoso. She's the sister of a woman that has a yibum bond to her husband. So the pikhis wife is what is of concern to us, that she should not live in sin. And she is obligated, she's duty bound to the mitzvah. She's a pikhis, she's an adult and normal. Toshma. So we again cite from our Mishnah, and in an attempt to be asking on Rebbe Pedos. Again, we'll see the issue of Cheresh coming up, Chareshes, which is parallel to the case of the cotton. Toshma, Shnei Achim Pikrin, Nisuin Shtei Achoyas, two brothers that are normal, both of them are normal, married to two sisters. Achas Pikrin, Vachas Chareshes. One is normal and the other one is a deaf mute. Mace. We're using, we should have noted a little earlier, but the double underline simply helps visually to highlight the word mace, where the case begins, where the Yibum case begins, with the death of an individual leaving no children. Mace pikeach ba'al chareshes, the brother that was married to the Chareshes, which is a rabbinic level type marriage. Ma yaseh pikeach ba'al pikhus, what should his brother do who's married to her sister who's normal? Teitse mishum achos isha, the widow, the Chareshes, simply goes free. Yibum cannot be done whatsoever. There's no mitzvah of Yibum because she is the sister of the surviving brother's wife. Meis pikeach ba'al pikhus, ma yaseh pikeach ba'al chareshes. The widow here is the normal woman. She's a, we'll say, a doraisa, obligated yevoma. What should the surviving brother, who's married to her sister that happens to be a deaf mute, what should be done? Motzi es ishto beget. He divorces his own wife. The surviving brother divorces his own wife. His own wife is really forbidden to him because she's called achos zikukoso. She's the sister of a woman to whom he has a Torah level yibum bond, so he can't continue with his wife. He divorces his wife with a get. V'yeshes achiv b'chalitza, he can't do yibum with the yavama either because the yavam divorced her sister. She's now called achos grushasa. She's the sister of someone he divorced. So what does he do? He frees her by participating in chalitza with her. V'amai moitzias ishto beget. Why is there any necessity of divorcing the wife? Tesiv gabei. Let the chareshes woman continue with her husband. Katan oichel nevelasu. The chareshes, who is parallel to the katan, she is living a life of sin. She shouldn't be with her husband. That is true, but Is it not a case of katan oichel nevelasu where the inept one, the minor in this case, the deaf mute is doing an aveira, and according to Rabbi Pedos, we wouldn't get involved, and yet you see here she must be sent away. It would seem to prevent her, the inept one, from being engaged in violation. Not so. That's not the reason she's being sent away. Mishum isura di day. We're concerned with her husband. Her husband is a pikeach. And he, by continuing with her, would be living in sin. And in order to prevent him from sinning, and he's an adult, normal individual, he must send his wife away. Omar Rava, Toshma. Shnei Achin, Echot Cheresh Vechot Pikeach. Nisuin l'shtei achoyas, achas pikhis v'achas chareshes. Two brothers, one normal and one a deaf mute, married to two sisters that have the same characteristics. And they are lined up with each other. Meis cheresh ba'al chareshes, ma yaseh pikech ba'al pikhis. Don't forget, the issues in this case involves two sisters as well. So the widow here is the chareshes. What should the normal brother do? Teitse mishum achos ishto. The yavama is to leave the scene. She's exempt from yibum chalitza. She's the sister of the surviving brother's wife. Meis pikeach bal pikris. The widow in this case is a normal woman. Mayasa cheresh bal chareshes. What should the cheresh, the deaf mute brother, do? Moitzi as ishto beget. He divorces his wife. He sends her away because she is the sister of a woman that is bound to him in Yibum. V'eshes achiv asuro li'olam. And the wife, the widow in this case, remains permanently forbidden. She cannot marry anybody. In order for her to be released, she would need chalitza. And the cheresh is incapable of doing chalitza. He can't read. He's a deaf mute. He cannot read the parsha. And certainly Yibum cannot be done. The Yavama is the sister of a woman he just divorced. She remains locked in prohibition forever. The case here where we saw Motzias Ishto Beget, who was doing that? That was a deaf mute that was divorcing his wife, who was also a deaf mute. As far as the answers we had seen before in the last two challenges, we said we were concerned with the member, the spouse that was obligated in mitzvahs. Here, neither the cheresh nor the chareshes are obligated in mitzvahs. They both have the status similar to that of a katan. V'katani moitzias ishto beget. And it teaches here that the wife must be divorced. The cheresh is divorcing his chareshes wife. So we can't allow them to continue living in sin. That would be a challenge to Rabbi Pedas. Omar Rav Shmaya, Gzeira Mishum Hatoras Yevoma Lashuk. This is a specific situation. In other words, the case here where we say Moitzi as Ishto Beget is a specific situation, because if we don't say that, we can end up getting the wrong ideas concerning laws of Yibum. We'll get a little more detailed in a moment. But here we have extenuating circumstances that we have to intervene and insist that the Cheresh divorced his wife. In other words, that the Katan shouldn't continue Eichel Nevelas in this case. But in general, we would let the sin continue if the child is behaving on his own. So what's the problem over here? So let's take a look at the Rashi. The second line from the top of the page, Mishum Gzeras HaTorah Yevom Lashuk. The Iyamrina on Tesef Chareish is Gabi Chareish. If we would let them live together, Lo Yadi Inshi, the public aren't always informed. They don't understand. They wouldn't know the time of Mishum Kot Leichol Nevelis Hu. That the reason for us leaving them together is because it's only a minor or an inept and unqualified individual who is doing the sin. Fisavri, what will people think? The kiddushin dida dachu lo lezika de pikachas achoisa. People would think that you have a woman that's married to a man, the Chareshis. Her marriage to her husband overpowers the Yibum bond of her normal sister. V'ein boyel achosikus also. And by the man, the Chareshis, remaining with his wife, he's not guilty of having intimacy with the sister of a woman bound to him. That's what people will think. People will look at the pikachas and say, you know what? You're an achosisha. Go free. Marry whomever you like, just like in general we say to an achosisha. That's exempt even from chalitza. So that's not true, though. she is, in this case, she's not exempt on from chalitza on the grounds of achos isha, because her sister's marriage to the surviving brother was a very low level connection. So she really is a zakuka. We therefore have to deal with the situation and not let the surviving brother continue living with his wife. Because as we said, no, just we're just going to repeat ourselves, if they do continue living together as husband and wife, people will think that the widowed sister is a straightforward case of achos isha and is allowed to marry out, when that's not the case. So here we have to intervene and do as the source indicated. But in general, if it's other areas of prohibition and the child is doing something on his own, you don't have to stop him. Just like Rabbi Pedos had taught. As you can see, this represents the end of the 14th perek of Yevamos. We now continue with the 15th perek Ho'isha. It's called Ho'isha Shalom, even though those aren't the first two words of the perek. Nevertheless, you'll see the word Shalom appearing shortly thereafter. It's noteworthy that the following perek, the 16th perek of Yevamos, is called Ho'isha Basra. Begins also with the word Ho'isha, so as to distinguish name-wise between the 15th perek and the 16th perek. The 16th perek is referred to as the latter chapter involving the woman, the Isha. Isha Basra. Basra means the last one. Before we continue with the new perek, we glance at the side and we indicate Nosei Klali, a general topic heading, Nemonus Isha Loimar Meis Bali, the trustworthiness of a woman to testify, to inform us that her husband is dead. And of course, with that information, she would expect to be able to marry someone else. And if there is a Yavam, if she is a woman whose husband died without children, then with that information, she would end up marrying her brother-in-law. We turn to the Mishnah now. Ho'isha shahocha hiu ba'ilum nisayam, a woman who went abroad with her husband. Shalom beino leveino v'shalom ba'olam. You'll see with our numbering system, you can see we've highlighted three different situations. The first is a case where the couple were getting along with one another, a couple that were at peace with one another. It was not a, let's see, difficult marital relationship. It was a peaceful one, and it was not a time of war. There is a Rashi that says Shalom Boilam She'ein Shas Chirum D'Tema B'Dedomi. It's not the time of Chirum. Chirum is a word that indicates some type of dangerous societal circumstances, like a war or other kinds of dangerous situations. So the Mishnah is describing a case of Shalom Ba'olam. Now, in the case of dangerous circumstances, there Rashi introduces concepts we'll see in the Gemara, that then trustworthiness of a woman drops. The Tema B'Dami, she'll say things through not actual awareness of facts, but what is B'Dami? May oimed liba, through her estimating things. Im pireish hemena chodesh uchotshayim, if she finds that he's not been with her for a month or 2 months, varei hoil velo chazar. It's obvious then to her that his lack of return, hargu listim, the bandits killed him. The hoil velav shas chirum. Therefore, in our case, when you're dealing with a non-dangerous circumstance, we're at peaceful situation, peaceful times. Ilo chazise demis, if she had not seen him actually dead, She wouldn't say that her husband is dead and then go marry someone else. She would be concerned with the mess up that could result. Maybe the husband will come back after she married someone else. As another parak you can see named Risha that we've learned in the past. In a case of a woman whose husband comes back after she married someone else, she is forbidden to be with her husband. She's forbidden to be with the second fellow that she married, and she loses all of her financial guarantees. She has a lot to lose, as we have learned in the past. So that when you have times of peace, both the marital situation is peaceful, the societal situation is peaceful, a woman isn't going to take a chance and say her husband is dead. And if she says that he is dead, we can believe her. So now the Mishnah continues. Ubo v'yomra, the woman in a case of Sholom Beino Leveino, and Sholomom comes and says, Meis Bali, my husband died. Tino say, she can marry someone else. Meis Bali, if she says Meis Bali and the husband had no children, Tisyabein, she becomes a Yavoma and can marry her husband's surviving brother for Yibum. Now we change the circumstances. Sholom Beino Leveino, Milchoma Boilam. It's a happily married couple, but we're dealing with a time of war. Ktota beino leveino v'shalom boilam, or the couple are not happily married. There is strife. Ktota means they're fighting, or there's strife between them, even though there's peace outside. Ubosa v'yomra meis bali eino nemenes, and she tells us in circumstances two or three, she comes and tells us, "Well, my husband is dead." We don't believe her. Rebuta Omer Liolame non emenes, we never believe her. Elohim Cain, Bosa Boichub Godel Kruin, unless she comes crying with rent clothing. Omru Lo, the Rabbonon responded to Rebuta, Achazu Viachazu Tinose, whether it's like this or like that, she is allowed to remarry. Before we continue, we glance at the sign under the Nosei, the topic heading, Be'es Milchoma Eino Nemenes Lomar Meis Bali. At the time of war, we do not believe a woman to say that her husband is dead. If she tells us during Shas Milchoma, I saw my husband dead, or my husband is dead, we do not believe her. The Gemara now points out why the Mishnah had to teach us the opening case. What was the significance of teaching the opening case? So the Gemara says, Tana Shalom Beino Leveino, the Mishnah states the case of a couple at peace, Mishum Dekaboy Lemisni Ketota Beino Leveino, because it was leading up to a contrast case of the couple that are at odds with one another. Tana Shalom Bolam, it taught the case of peace in the world, Mishum Dekaboy Lemisni Milchoma Bolam, because it was leading up to a contrasting case of war in the world. Omar Rava, my taima de milchoma. What is the reason that during war circumstances we say the woman is not believed? Even though you're dealing with a couple that were living together in peace. We said in the Mishnah there was shalom beino leveino, but if there's milchoma ba'olam, she is not believed. Why? Mishum di omra bididomi. The information she reveals that her husband is dead is done as a result of estimation, conjecture, as opposed to hard facts. The savra, she figures. Salka, in this line you read with a certain intonation, an intonation we call bitmiha, with wonderment. Salka daita becholhani de iktol hu palit. Would one think that amongst all those that have been killed in battle, he escaped? Im tim tzolomar, kevon de shalom beino leveino, natra ad dechazya. You might try to say, since they were a loving couple, she would certainly wait until she sees him actually dead. Not so. Zimnin demochu le begira o berumcha. You could have a situation where he was struck with an arrow or a spear. The Savra Vadai mace, and she figured, oh, look at this, it's a battle raging, and her husband was struck by one of these weapons, and she'll figure he's definitely dead. And the reason that we cannot rely on that is V'iko di Ovat Santeri V'choya. There is a possibility of the fellow having been bandaged up properly, stopping his loss of blood, and he would continue living. So as a result of how the woman thinks concerning her husband under war-type circumstances, we cannot rely on the information, because she will tell us that her husband is dead after having simply seen this level of event. Namely, he was lying there wounded, and that would have been enough for her to conclude his death. And that, as we just demonstrated, is not necessarily the actual result. Before we go on in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei mivneh heading, where we have a topic heading combined with a structural note. The triangle is featured, and you'll see Rava's name is highlighted. Gimel Shlovim, three stages, Bedaita Shorava, regarding Rava's thinking, Ve'inyin Ne'monus Isha B'shas Re'ovan, the trustworthiness of a woman during times of famine. The double underline are Matzovim Hadoimim L'Milchama, situations that will appear in the Gemara as we go on in the Gemara, different situations that the Gemara parallels to war. What does war represent for us? It represents wives reporting husband's death based on estimation as opposed to hard fact. So we continue now in the Gemara. Sovar Rava Lememar. This is stage one, stage Aleph. Sovar Rava Lememar. Reavon Eino Kimilchoma Delo Omra B'Dedomi. That when you're dealing with a time of famine or a place where famine has struck, the woman reporting her husband's death is not like the woman reporting it in the time of war. In the time of war, she would say things without conclusive knowledge of his death. But in the case of a famine, if she comes and says, my husband died, we could believe her. Hoder Omar Rava, Reavon Hare Hu Kimuchoma. And then Rava had a change of mind based on the following story. Dahi de Osis Lekame de Rava. A woman came to Rava Omrole. She told Rava, Baali Meisparov, my husband died in famine. Omar Law, so Rava says to her, and Rashi points out that Rava is now is playing along with the woman, trying to get out of her what really happened. So Rava says to her, oh, you say your husband died. Shapir avdist deshezvis nafshech. You did well to save yourself. Like you escaped, you ran away from that area of the famine. Salka daitoch de bahu purta de napfisa deshavkisle havachaye. Would anyone think that the little flour that you had sifted represents a little bit of food? The little bit of napfisa is sifting. The little bit of sifted flour that you left for him, he could possibly live. Omrole, so she said to Rava, wow, how did you know? That's exactly what happened. Mor nami yoda dechi hai gavna lo chaye. Yeah, you too know that with that little bit, that this chi hai gavna means in that way, namely the little bit, a person couldn't possibly live. So what do you see though? You see that she left him still alive with very little to subsist on. Fine, but things can happen that a person survives. She doesn't know that he's definitely dead. She's assuming that he's dead. And Rava successfully revealed that that's what she was saying, and that's what she, and upon that she acted. So that caused Rava to have a change of mind. Rava, and then Rava went even further. Ravon griya milchama. The standards we apply under circumstance of famine are stricter or more demanding than the circumstances in the case of war. And the Gemara explains. The ilu milchama ki omro meis bali bil milchama hu delo mehemna. When it comes to war, if she says my husband died in war, then we don't believe her. Oh, may sal mitaso. However, if she would tell us, yes, if let's say we knew there was a war, but she tells us he died on his bed, not in battle. He died on his bed. Mehemna, we would believe her. V'ilu gabi ra'avoin. However, when it comes to circumstances of famine, Adomra meis ukevartiv. Until she tells us, he died and I buried him. In the case of famine, if she would simply say, he died on his bed, we wouldn't accept that. We wouldn't believe her to allow her to marry someone else. So that you see that the standard we apply to Revon is she must reveal to us, not only did he die, but I also buried him. Only then, in the case of Re'ovon, would we believe her. Ma'polis harehu kemilchoma. Di omra b'didomi. A ma'polis is where a house caves in on its inhabitants. Rashi says, Shenofal habayas olav, the house imploded upon him. O ruach sara v'hoyamapu kobot here, or a storm afflicted the area, was reminiscent of a tornado, possibly, that is capable of knocking down all the houses of a city. Well, that situation of Mapoilis, where she saw a house caved in on her husband, she'll tell us he's dead without actually having seen him as such. Once again, her estimating, her figuring, her rationalizing, he must be dead. So we can't rely on that. Shiluach nechoshim v'akrovim harei hein kemilchoma, di omra b'didomi. A plague of snakes and scorpions, venomous creatures. She might see her husband having been attacked by these creatures, being in a circumstance where these creatures were all over. She'll come and tell us, he's dead. But she's really saying in all likelihood, he's dead. So her comment of he is dead cannot be relied upon. She's saying so bididomi, once again, through conjecture. Dever. Dever is pestilence. Amri lo harehu kimochoma, vi amri lo eino kimochoma. Some say it is treated like we say by milchoma. In other words, she will say he's dead even without actual concrete knowledge of that. And some say no, it's not like milchoma. Milchoma, she'll say things through conjecture, not so with regard to dever. Amri lo harehu kimilchoma, di amri b'didomi. As we said, she'll say in the case of dever, that her husband's death as a result of conjecture. The amri lo eino kimilchoma. And others say that dever is not like milchoma. If she says that he is dead, she is saying so with certainty. The samchi ad amri inshi. She relies on that which is commonly said. Shev shonin have moisna v'inish below shoni lo oziel. There can be 7 years of moisna, of death, of pestilence. But people, when a person does not die before his time, which I would take to mean that it's common knowledge, and including in the minds of women, that dever is not the reason for assuming death. So she wouldn't conjecture that just because there was dever, he must be dead. There are many cases of extensive dever, but a person does not die before his time. And so if she's telling us he is dead, she's not saying it as a result of conjecture regarding the dever, but because she knows factually that he is dead. A new marking appears on the side. It's featured under the Nosei Mivneh heading, the bow tie shape, and we've written She'elois Be'inyone Ne'emonus Almisus Habal Bekesher L'Melchoma. Questions regarding trustworthiness concerning information of death of husband with regard to war matters. Hechzika hi milchama or aid echad bimilchama. First question involves a woman who is responsible for our knowledge of there having been a war in the first place. Up till now, we were talking about cases where we knew there was a war, and all she was revealing to us was that her husband is dead. In the question, we'll be dealing with a situation where we're not aware of the war. She tells us about the war. If she wouldn't have told us about the war, and she simply comes and tells us, my husband is dead, and she was a woman that was happily married, we would believe her, as we indicated before. She's sufficiently deterred from lying because of the circumstances that would result if she in fact is lying and the husband comes back. What happens, though, if she informs us that that the death was in war circumstances? The Gemara, of course, will develop the question on Kuf Tes Vov Amud Aleph in the middle of the Omid. You will see a second question of an Eid Echad, a singular witness in the time of war. Does he have believability? So now the Gemara. Ibaya le hechzika hi milchama bo'olamahu. She establishes the facts in our minds concerning the existence of a war. And then she tells us, my husband is dead. Mi amrinon, do we say, ma lo l'shakir? Just to repeat what we learned before, under war circumstances, we are aware of on our own, and a woman comes and tells us, my husband is dead, we don't believe her. Here we weren't aware of the war. So can we say as follows? Ma lo l'shakir. What does she gain by telling us this information and be lying about it, about her husband's death? De'i baya omra, she could have simply said shalom ba'olam, that my husband is dead, and it was a peaceful place. We would believe her. Rashi on the top, de'i baya omra shalom ba'olam u'mehemna, and she would be believed. Hashtonami mehemna, now too, that she tells us that there was a war circumstance, and my husband is dead. Let us believe her, because as we said, she could have gotten off with a much smoother a point of information. She basically is drawing fire by saying there was war. She's putting herself into a position of non-believability. But since she initiated that, maybe we should believe her. Oydilma Rashi continues, Hocha lekulameimar ma lo l'shakir. Here, maybe we don't apply that principle of why should she be telling a lie because she had something better to tell us. De'i gufa lo mechavna l'shkuri. We're dealing with a case of a woman who has no intention to begin with to lie. Elo kevon dischazik milchoma. But rather, since she establishes that there was a war, Amru b'dedami, she'll say things through conjecture. Usvura yi shemes, and she thinks that he's dead. Now, we continue in the Gemara. So we presented one side of the question, and that is that if she is the one that's responsible for establishing the facts
for us. She is the one telling us that there was a war. Maybe we should believe her because she had something better to say. Oy Dilma Kevon de Chazoka Hu de Omra Bedami. Since it's a given assumption that when women speak about husbands' deaths in times of war, they say things through conjecture. V'lo osi mali l'shakir umera chaskose. The explanation of mali l'shakir isn't strong enough to overpower a given, an assumed status that people have, that women have, of saying things through conjecture. The Gemara continues with a new marking. We have a volcano shape, and you can see on the side it appears as we go on in the Gemara in two alternating directions. The reason for that is, as we've written on the side, Rayos Lishnei Kivunim. These are proofs in two directions. The Gemara now presents a case where she establishes facts before she tells us that her husband died. Toshma, Ishinu Aleinu Bayis. The word Ishinu comes from the word Oshon. Oshon is smoke. We can say that the woman is telling us that our house was on fire. That's similar to her telling us that there was a war. The house became full of smoke. Ishinu aleinu ma'ora, or they were in a cave, and the cave became full of smoke. I ran out. Humes vani nitzavti. He died. I was saved. Eino ne'emenes. She is not believed. So this would be like the Beis in our presentation of the question on Aleph Oy Dilmo Beis. This would be like the second side of the equation in presenting the question. The Gemara says, Shiny Hossam. That case is different than a case of a woman telling us that there was a war. The Omar law, or the Amrinon law, we tell her, Ki hechi deledidoch Israchish Nisa, just like you were miraculously saved, you got out of the smoke-filled cave or smoke-filled house. Ledide nami Israchish Nisa, so too the same thing happened to him. But in a case of war, the woman wouldn't say that in a case where the woman established that there was a war, she wouldn't say that he's dead unless she actually saw him. We take a look at the Rashi. Shiny Hosom. The Amrinon, Kishinismali Oshon Borcha, Felohim Tino Achitireu Mace. We say there, when the house or the cave got filled with smoke, she ran away and didn't wait to see him dead. V'imishum oshon, and if you'll say, well, but it was smoke filled, ki hechid lidoch israchish nisa, just like a miracle happened to you and you were able to escape, so too with him. Avolagabi milchoma, with regard to the situation where she establishes our knowledge of the war, ikolameim alu omro, there's room to say she wouldn't say he's dead, ilo chazise, if she didn't actually see him dead. Daha e baya lishkuri, if she wanted to lie, lo have machzik milchom avodim, she wouldn't have told us that there was a war in the first place. So the fact that she weakens her position by her level of believability by telling us that there was a war, that's enough insurance for us to realize that she must be telling the truth. Ta Shema, we continue in the Gemara. Naflu aleinu oivdei kechavim. We were attacked by idol worshippers. Naflu aleinu listim. We were attacked by bandits. Hu meis v'nitzalti. My husband, he died, and I was saved. Ne'emenes. Again, here we dashed underline. the main point, here she is believed. Well, then that would be like the first of the possibilities presented in our original question. The Gemara says, no, that is different. Hasam kidarav idi. There, we have a basis of saying that she is believed, but it wouldn't apply in general. The Omer of Idi, Isha Klei Zaino Aleha. Here, literally, it means a woman has her weapons upon her, built into her. Now, we'll explain that a little further by looking into the Rashi. We're looking at Rashi about a third of the way up from the bottom. Hosam kidrav idi bar oven klomar. Hocha kevon de milchoma ktanahi deihi have bahadei. Here we're dealing with what we call a small war. It was a band of idol worshippers that attacked them, or a band of bandits. Not a major conflagration, a small war. And she was with him. Lo amra b'dedomi. She would not say that he's dead only through conjecture. Ela notro v'chazilei, and she would wait to see that he's actually dead. Now say, well, isn't she endangered? How could she hang around there? Wouldn't she be trying to run away? No, the isha lo mistifer milistim. A woman is not afraid in terms of her life being threatened by the bandits, based on Rav Edi's teaching. Now, here Rashi doesn't elaborate, but the woman can spare herself, can save herself by consenting to intimacy with these attackers. So she doesn't feel threatened. She feels that she'll exchange her services, we'll say, for her self-preservation, and hence she could very well have remained on the scene seeing her husband actually dead, as opposed to a case of a war that, even if she happens to establish that information, still, once she says that there was a war, it's as Rashi explained earlier, as the Gemara itself explained earlier, that women will then automatically go into conjecture mode based on, of course, the assumption, the reasonable assumption, that they're not hanging around in the case of a major conflagration. They're going to run away. At best, they saw their husbands mortally wounded, but they didn't see him actually dead. Here, as we just said, in the case where she establishes this information, she's not running away because of Rav Edi's, as Rav Edi taught. Hahu Gavro, there was a man, the Bashili, he lay toward the end of his wedding, Isli Nura Be Ginoni. A fire broke out in the wedding hall. Omra Lahu Divisu. The bride, the wife, Divisu is his wife, said, Chazu Gavroi, Chazu Gavroi, do you see my husband? Do you see my husband? Osu. They came, Chazu Gavru Charuka Dushadi. They saw a charred body cast on the floor, Upista Diyoda Dushadya. And a Pista Diyoda is a hand, and that was a hand that was cut, that was cast there on the floor. So what do we see? We have a charred body and a hand that separated. Sovar Rav Chiya bar Ovin Lemeimar. Rav Chiya thought to say, Hainu, this is a case of Ishinu Leinu Bayis, Ishinu Aleinu Ma'ora. Rashi, notice there's a Rashi, Pisto Diyoda Meish Acher Habol Hatsilo. There was a piece of hand that must have belonged to another man that came to try to save him. Rashi continues, Hainu ishinu diamoron ki hechi deledidoch israchish. We explained before that in the case of ishinu aleinu bias, we could not believe her because we would say, just like you escaped with a nace, so too he escaped. Omar Rava, mi domi. How can you compare these cases? Hosam lo ka'omra chazu gavroi chazu gavroi. There, in the case of Ishinu Alenu Bayis, Ishinu Ma'ora, you didn't have the woman saying, hey, do you see my husband? Do you see my husband? In other words, by her saying, do you see my husband? She's saying, there's the body of my husband. That wasn't the case in Ishinu Alenu Bayis. V'yoid Gavra Charuka Deshadi Upisto Diyoda Deshadya. And here you've got a body, you've got a charred body and a piece of hand. All evidence, as far as Rava is concerned, showing that here he is, the husband is dead. Rav Chiya Bar Ovin. Now, Rav Chiya Bar Ovin didn't adopt Rava's approach. Rav Chiya Bar Ovin figured like this: Gavro Charuka Deshadya, the charred body that was lying there, Emo Inish Achrina Osulatsule, that is the body of the some other fellow who came to save the husband. Vachilte Nuran, unfortunately, he, this outsider, was consumed by the fire. Upista Diyoda Deshadyan, the piece of hand that's cast there, that is actually the Chosan's hand. Nura Isilabay, it got burnt off his body. Visyalid Bay Mumo, and now the Chosan is an armless individual. He's now blemished. Umachmas Kisufa Ozavar Glamon, because of embarrassment, he ran away. And that's why he's not here. But not because that charred body is your husband's. So, Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, as we said, approached this case of the bride and groom, where the bride is saying, hey, do you see my husband? Do you see my husband? And the charred body is lying there. That's no better than the case of Ishinu Aleinu Bayis that we saw before, where we said, Eino Ne'emenes, she's not believed. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.